Fasten your seatbelts and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. Wisconsin is home to more than 49,000 Hmong, more than 6,000 of whom reside in Marathon, Portage, and Wood counties. During the Vietnam War, tens of thousands of Hmong fought as U.S. allies. And after the war, they were forced to flee their home country of Laos to avoid persecution by the communist regime. They arrived in the U.S. as refugees. The news that the Trump administration is working on an agreement with the Lao People's Democratic Republic to deport thousands of Hmong from the U.S. is prompting alarm and confusion in the local Hmong community. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. The State Department in February confirmed that the Trump administration is calling on Laos to accept more deportees and has offered funding for a reintegration program there. But what is the potential impact here in our region? Joining us today in the studio is Yi Lang Zhang, the executive director of the Hmong American Center in Wausau. He also sits on the Marathon County Board of Supervisors, the Everest School Board, and is a trustee in the village of Weston. Yi, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you.
Also in the studio today is Chai Mua from Stevens Point. Chai works as the civic engagement contractor for Freedom, Inc. It's a nonprofit organization that is helping those at risk of deportation gain legal protection. Chai also sits on the Portage County Board of Supervisors. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
We'll take your calls and questions, too. Join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. Yi, let's start with you. You're in several leadership roles in Marathon County, but what is the Hmong American Center? What is it, and what's your role there?
Sure. So my role at the Hmong American Center is I'm the executive director there. The Hmong American Center serves the Southeast Asian community, specifically Hmong individuals, but that also means that we also serve individuals from the Laotian community and Thai community, and we try to build a stronger and more self-sustainable community, specifically in the Southeast Asian community here, through collaboration and education.
How long have you been the executive director there?
I've been the executive director since approximately 2016, so it's been 4 years now.
Okay. And Chai, you're on the Portage County Board. You also work for Freedom, Inc. What is that exactly, and what does that do?
Yeah, so Freedom, Inc. is an organization based in Madison that serves low to no income women and children, predominantly Black and Southeast Asian women and children. Freedom, Inc. is ran by queer, femme, and women, Black and Southeast Asian, queer, femme, and queer women. My role there is I am the Community Power Coalition Director now, and I run all of our civic engagement and community power building work in the state of Wisconsin. We fund, we not only do local work, but then we fund and support local organizations such as the Hmong American Center and other organizations to build local community power and community organize around issues.
So it sounds like the two of you work together pretty frequently.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Well, let's start with an overview of the issue as it stands today. Can you explain what exactly the State Department is reportedly proposing in its talks with the Lao government? I don't know which of you, perhaps Yi?
Sure. So, from our understanding, the State Department has begun discussions or has continued discussions with the Laotian government on deporting individuals with green cards who has been convicted of a felony and has been received the final deportation order. Obviously, that is very concerning to the Southeast Asian community due to the fact that there has been no official MOU or no official contract that has been written specifically regarding the Hmong individuals or Laotian individuals. And this is concerning because that means that right now it's open to interpretation.
Okay. So specifically then, what are you hearing from reaction in the local communities here?
Sure. So in the local community here, obviously I've spent numerous times speaking with the local clan leaders here, the local community members, and they are concerned. You know, they are concerned that even if the deportation of one individual, that has a potential impact on the whole clan system itself, on the many family that's in here. As we all know, the Hmong community is a very strong and family. They have very strong ties within their own family structure, and because of this, you know, there's going to be individuals that's going to be impacted from the result of deporting individuals. individuals. And we also have to remember that the individuals that are going to suffer the most is going to be the women and children, and also those individuals that are depending on those individuals that are going to be deported back.
And Chai, is that pretty much what you're hearing from the people in your in the Stevens Point area and the Portage County communities, that fear and over what's going to happen not only to the people who are being potentially deported, but the families?
Yes, that is exactly what we're hearing, too. And at Freedom Inc., we are getting like 2 to 3 calls a day from people, mostly from women and children, calling about their dads or their husbands or their sons. Who have final deportation orders. I talked to numerous women and children who are worried about what will happen to their families.
Does it have to be a felony, or is it that causes that final deportation order? Is it sometimes a misdemeanor, or is it always a felony?
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily has to be a felony. It can be any crime that is defined under immigration law.
Okay.
As deportable.
All mm-hmm. right, and we know. I'm just saying that I know that mm-hmm. not all felonies are alike. It's a felony, mm-hmm. for example, to have a second offense. Marijuana possession, that is quite a different felony from a homicide or a mm-hmm. armed robbery. So I was just curious if they're treated any differently, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, immigration law is really complicated, mm-hmm. and we're not immigration attorneys. So.
Sure, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, I still remember in the 1970s, the church my family attended sponsored a Southeast Asian family. It was one of the first mm-hmm. Southeast Asian families that came to Wausau. They came here to resettle. And I was pretty young. I think I was 7 or 8 years old when this happened. And I don't know that I fully understood why they were here. I just knew what my church and what my family had told me, that these were people that needed our help, that they were escaping persecution. But I don't know that I had a full understanding of it back then. Maybe a little background would be helpful in understanding what's happening. So what was the Hmong role in the Vietnam War, and how did this whole thing start?
Sure. So back during the Vietnam War, because of the agreements that the United States had with the countries around it, it was not allowed to enter into Laos due to the fact that Laos was a neutral country during then. However, North Vietnam had a trail that was going through the country of Laos, and that trail was known as the Ho Chi Minh Trail. So, in order for the United States to counter any supplies from being transported from the North Vietnam to South Vietnam, they ended up hiring or bring on individuals or small ethnics in Laos, specifically Hmong individuals, Cambodians, Khmers, and the whole goal was for them to disrupt the supplies that would be transported along that trail. Now, the Hmong community and the members of the Laotian community, these guerrilla warriors, were tasked with 3 very important tasks, and these tasks were: 1 was to disrupt the supplies being transported Ho Chi Minh Trail. 2 was to protect radio towers that was allowing the United States Army to communicate. And also 3 was to rescue pilots that were shot down. Now, it was estimated that for every United States pilot that was saved, 30 Hmong or Laotian individuals' lives would be lost in exchange for one pilot. Now, at the fall of Saigon, and also the withdrawal of the United States forces, there was an attempt to persecute the Hmong community and also the Laotian, those individuals, basically anybody that was opposing the communist regime that was happening, that was occurring down there. At the conclusion of the war, it was estimated that approximately 25% of all men and women, all men and young boys of the Hmong population there was died from fighting, and that did not include all the deaths that were all the deaths of civilian deaths, all the women and children's death, and all the casualties from the journey from Laos to Thailand. So there was approximately 300,000 people of Hmong descent that lived in Laos during that time, which is approximately about the same population in the United States right now. So and eventually they ended up coming to the United States here through state sponsored. But from my understanding, members of the United States government actually tried to hit the fact that they employed guerrilla unit to help, and that's why most of these individuals were known as the Secret Army. They were meant to be known as secret veterans, and meant for the world to never know that these individuals existed.
Okay. How many refugees eventually made their way to the U.S. and to central Wisconsin after all of this happened? Do you have an estimate? Is it tens of thousands of people that came here?
Yeah, from my recollection, there was tens of thousands of people that came to the United States here. How many exactly? I'm not exactly sure.
Mm-hmm. One question I've got, I know that many of the refugees who came to the U.S. since became citizens. Now, the people who became citizens, this does not affect them whatsoever, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I shouldn't say it doesn't affect them whatsoever, but it doesn't affect them directly. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be deported. But if they're not citizens, then there's some risk. Is that the case?
Yeah, well, the folks who are directly impacted by this are the folks who may have committed or been convicted before they were able to get their citizenship.
Okay.
Many of these folks came into the United States as children, may have been a child when this happened and was convicted in adult court, or were young adults.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So are there cases where they are they committed the crime and then they became citizens and there's still an issue?
Many of these folks aren't able to become citizens.
I see.
Many of them will serve their time and then go straight to immigration detention, mm-hmm. where they are stripped of their permanent resident status.
Okay.
And given these final deportation orders without even knowing that what was going on.
I see. And what are some of the reasons? I mean, obviously, a crime might be one mm-hmm. of them. But what are some of the reasons that people might choose to remain green card holders rather than become citizens? Is it time? Is it expense? I mean, what is the barrier?
Well, it's expensive. You know, honestly, for myself, I couldn't afford to become a citizen until 2013. And I've been here since I was 2 years old.
Oh.
It is also, you know, we talk a lot about this deportation that's happening now is actually the end result of a failed refugee resettlement program. Our folks were brought here to the United States, put in some of the poorest neighborhoods, and weren't provided, you know, honestly, I don't think they were provided the enough support to be able to become citizens, to have what it is to pass that test. My parents studied for years to be able to pass a test.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Are your parents both citizens now?
My parents are both citizens, but again, you know, that was like a whole decade of studying English and being able to pass that test.
Interesting. We do need to take a break. Chaimua and Yi Lang Zhang are guests today on Route 51 as we continue this discussion on the potential impact that a proposed deportation agreement between the U.S. and Lao government could have on local Hmong communities. A programming note for listeners, Route 51 will move from its Thursday morning slot on the Ideas Network to Friday mornings at 10 a.m. on March 20th. Join the conversation today by calling 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Yi Lang Zhang and Chai Mua are our guests today discussing a proposed increase in deportation to Laos and the impact on the local Hmong community. We'd like to hear from you too. The number to call is 800-780-9742. Last month, Mary Tao, who is a Wausau School Board and Wausau City Council member, told the council that at least 5 people in Marathon County are under final deportation orders. I know the number is about 5,000 nationwide. That is what has been reported pretty widely. Can you take me through the process? How does someone who is here with a green card wind up with a deportation order?
Yeah. You know, again, like I said earlier, a lot of these folks came into the United States as children. Some of these folks were children as they were leaving Laos or were born in refugee camps. They are here in the United States. They may have committed a crime, just like everyone else here in the mm-hmm. United States who've made mistakes. But because they aren't citizens, after they serve their time that they're sentenced to, they go Some will serve immigration detention and then actually get their status removed there, or may have been released into the community and have released to the community and then later on get their status removed when they come into contact with immigration, either through renewing their green cards or attempting citizenship.
All right. And then do they appear in front of a judge? What happens next?
Yeah. Well, you know, some do appear in front of a judge. The other is what we're hearing from folks is when they're detained by immigration, they are told that to sign documents. And if they sign documents, they can leave. Or if they sign documents, that they actually won't be deported because there is no agreement between Laos and the United States. So some folks will sign these documents so they can come back home to their families.
Okay. Okay, we do have a caller. It's Chris from Adams. Thanks for joining, Chris.
Hi. I have had, he has since departed us because of Agent Orange disease, but I had an extended family member who was twice MIA POW. He was a sniper that was dropped behind enemy lines in Laos and Cambodia to go into infiltrate Viet Cong positions and get rid of them. And the Hmong helped not only find out where people were that were being detained by them when they got captured, but also helping our troops find out where these installations were. And I think it's really important for the American public to understand the history of this, because your community came here with absolutely nothing. You gave up your land, you gave up your homes, and you did it because of us. And it was a stupid war, and people were really hurt. And I just wanted to say that I'm really, really, really grateful to your community for having done what it did.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for the call. We really appreciate that, Chris. And certainly callers can weigh in on this topic by calling 800-780-9742. I do want to note that we did reach out to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Public Affairs Officer for Wisconsin, who is based in Chicago. We have not had a response. I guess I'd like to know a little bit more about the process. How do agents locate people with final orders? Is it always when they're renewing their green card or when they have contact with police? How does it happen?
Well, those who have final removal orders probably will already be checking in with immigration every year.
Okay.
They're required to check in with their immigration officers, those who may have committed a crime and may not have been stripped of their permanent residence card. There are numerous ways that they may come in contact with immigration, either through, you know, being pulled over by police, many different ways. We don't even know how immigration really works at locating folks. But.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. In February, Route 51 had a quarterly legislative roundup. We do it a few times quarterly, exactly. Mm-hmm. So Republican State Representative Pat Snyder, who represents the 85th District, was on the show. And we asked him about this issue. And he said he'd like to see people who do have final deportation orders have the opportunity to appear again before a judge before being deported. Do you think that's a possibility? Is that something that's been being talked about?
Yeah, that's something that we at Freedom Inc. are looking at. You know, how do we help folks who have final deportation orders be able to reopen their cases and have it looked at again? Not just among individuals with deportation orders, but I also want to put in there that there are other refugees, such as the Cambodian refugees who have already been deported back to Cambodia, and the Vietnamese refugees who have been deported as well.
You know, that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up. When we were researching this, I'd like to point out that there are other similar agreements that are either in place or in the works that are impacting other refugee populations. One involves the government of Vietnam, the other one, Cambodia. Last year, the administration reinterpreted this 2008 agreement with Vietnam in several ways that would expand categories of refugees that it can deport, including permanent residents who have committed certain crimes and others who came to the U.S. as children after the Vietnam War and who have lived here most of their lives. So that effort which appears to have even affected offspring of U.S. troops who served in the Vietnam War, seems to be part of a broader push to increase the number of immigrants who are eligible for removal. I guess my question to both of you is, why is this happening now? Do you know, do you have a sense of why this is happening now?
You know, I just also want to put out there, I think this, a lot of talk has been around this administration, but we also want to point out, like, other administrations have historically also deported refugees.
Yes.
During the Obama administration, you know, there was a high deportation rate of Cambodians as well. But I think when these communities are smaller, folks really don't talk about it, and there isn't that much attention that is brought upon the deportation of these other communities. And here, at this moment, we're talking about the deportation of Hmongs,
mm-hmm.
right? And this, and I'm not trying to belittle the Hmong war hero story. Mm-hmm. We, I mean, what is true is true. Hmong
yes.
folks have fought alongside the U.S. soldiers, but also... the deportation of Hmongs is no different from the deportation of Cambodians and Vietnamese folks.
Okay.
It's just there's a lot more attention on it now because of our history with the United States.
Interesting. Is right now, is there an appeals process in place when an immigration judge enters an order of deportation? Is there an appeal that the people in your community are able to take advantage of at this time?
Mm-hmm. A lot of these cases are old. Some of these folks have been stripped, have had deportation orders for decades and have been living in our community, rebuilding their communities. So there, I'm sure like any other process, there is an appeal process. Immigration law is very confusing and complex. And this is not something that folks can easily afford to do.
Okay. There are about 300,000 Hmong people in the U.S., about 6,000 in Marathon, Portage, and Wood counties alone. It's a large segment of the population. Hmong have largely been protected from deportation in the past because the government in Laos won't accept them, right? We looked back at records that showed only a handful of Hmong have been deported in past years. So why is that? Why won't Laos accept deportees?
Well, I don't know if I can answer why the you know, Laotian government probably wouldn't accept Hmong deportees, but I know that from hearing the Laotian government also acknowledges that it would be almost impossible or difficult, very difficult for individuals of Hmong descent, you know, to be able to move to live there. One, because they can't speak the language. Two, you know, they're used to a different lifestyle, and it's just make everything more difficult for them when they do move there. You know, not saying that you know, that any deportation of anyone is good, but you know, obviously it would just make it more difficult, and it would, the cost of taking care of these individuals would eventually fall back on the Laotian government. That's from my understanding of their discussions. I don't know if Chai could probably put more input into it as well.
You know, don't know exactly what the answer is to that question. We do know that those who have been deported in the past may have entered the United States under different immigration statuses and not necessarily had entered in as a refugee. We do know that since August of 2019, those who entered as refugees have been deported back. I don't know what the why they haven't taken Hmong or in Lao refugees back in the past before,
okay,
and why now.
Well, the reports we're hearing is that the negotiations between the two governments involve some incentives to encourage them to take more, but I guess I was not sure at all why they wouldn't take them in the past. So
One, I did recall reading an article that the United States government is putting sanctions on the leadership in the Laotian government, and as we've seen what the United States did with North Korea when they put sanctions on the leadership of North Korea, you know, North Korea would tend to bend to the decisions or I hate to call it demands, but the demands of the United States government here. So now that they're I've seen that they also put, according to the article, if I recall correctly, they put, they put sanctions basically banning high-ranking Laotian government officials from coming to the United States here for whatever business trips or whatever they're doing. So obviously this has an impact on the higher-ranking officers or government officials in the Laotian government, and they're going to want to get these resolved. And I think this is one of the reasons why it's happening now, because of the pressure that the United States government is putting on the Laotian government.
Yeah, and we're seeing it's been confirmed that the USAID office is going to providing funds for a reintegration program into Laos.
Okay.
There are verbal agreements on the deportation and nothing written yet, and the countries are in negotiation. The United States is using money to move these negotiations.
So if someone is deported, their families don't go with them.
Mm-hmm.
They stay here.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you had mentioned, Chai, that you're hearing from a lot of women who are concerned about their husbands, their sons, their fathers. What are these people who are really, who have a very real chance of this happening?
You know, these are people who do actually check into immigration every year.
Okay.
These are people who have been, again, released into our communities and been living in our communities for 20 years since their convictions. They're now business owners, homeowners, have family, contribute to our vibrant communities that we uplift Hmong folks for so much. So it is very real for these folks now. And I just want to say that every one of us is impacted in a way because our communities are so small. I, too, have siblings who have final removal orders. So this is very personal to me.
You do. You have siblings who have final orders. What are they telling you? What are they saying to you?
They're doing their goodbyes. They're telling us everything that they've wanted to tell us because it's becoming more real for them. They've lost hope, and so we're trying to find ways to install hope back into them. But we also don't want the community to be in panic. I think there's a lot of organizers who are organizing every day on the ground, who have been organizing on this for the last 20 years. So we've been trying to help our family members gain that hope again.
Are you getting support from local lawmakers, or what kind of reaction are you getting from local lawmakers altogether? The people who represent us in the state or in the U.S. government?
Well, we're very thrilled, and every day I just feel very blessed with the amount of support from the non Southeast Asian community. You know, especially those individuals that are we call them allies. You know, who are constantly speaking out against this. You know, such as Governor Tony Evers. You know, Senator Tammy Baldwin, and I continue to remind other individuals who said that they're friends of the Southeast Asian community to continue to come outward and speak against these deportations. Orders. And I'm just glad that local government as well are trying to do what they can as well to pass resolutions, although they have limited input, limited control over what's happening at the federal level. They're all speaking what they feel and standing up in any way they can. And, we as we always mention, that there is a role for the non-Southeast Asian community to play in this. And it starts by speaking up.
Yeah, and, I think we've had a lot of support from legislators here in the state and in D.C. I do want to put out there, this is a bipartisan issue. This is an issue about human rights. The deportation of refugees is a violation of human rights, and it's a moral issue that everybody should be on. We did see that Representative McCollum from Minnesota did write a bill. And it's great, but our community needs permanent solutions.
And just to clarify that, it happened last week. U.S. Rep. Betty McCollum, she is a Democrat from Minnesota. She authored the Hmong and Lao Refugee Deportation Prohibition Act of 2020. It is a bill that would stop the government from deporting people to Laos for 72 months. and reopen the immigration cases of those with final orders of removal. Do you have any sense of whether this is getting any traction, whether it's gaining any widespread support? Is it too soon to tell?
Yeah, I think it's too soon. I also, you know, it is a temporary fix. Mm-hmm. You know, it would allow our folks to be able to still reach out and get their cases re-looked at and reopened. But I think that there's still a lot of barriers within, like, even that. So, you know, I haven't seen a lot of traction with this bill yet.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of those barriers that you think that could be overcome?
Yeah. Well, you know, I talk a lot about how expensive it is. Mm-hmm. A lot of our families have spent tens of thousands of dollars in attorney fees. And so just to reopen a case would be very expensive for families. I think some of the other barriers is, again, immigration law is very hard to understand. And also, like, some of these cases are so old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are some barriers you'd like to see removed to help further this process?
Well, you know, obviously the immigration system, you know, the process, obviously, it's very complex, you know. I don't want to say that it make the system, make the process a lot more simplified, but basically make it in a way where it's, in a sense, it's affordable to all, you know.
All right, we'll take a break. Yilang Zhang and Shai Mua are guests today on Route 51 as we continue our discussion on the potential for increased Hmong deportations and the impact on our local communities. A programming note for you, Route 51 will move to Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network on March 20th. You can join the conversation, too, today at 800-780-9742. I'm Shereen Siewert. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Siewert. Chai Mua and Yilang Zhang, our guests today, discussing a potential change in U.S. policy that could lead to thousands of Hmong deportations to Laos. We'd love to hear from you, too. Join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. Chai, you mentioned some of the past things that have happened that that other governments and other administrations had done in the past. I know in 1986, President Ronald Reagan passed an amnesty law, and then in 96, President Bill Clinton signed a bill that overhauled immigration enforcement and kind of laid the groundwork for the machine we have in place right now for deportation. It was a whole bundle of provisions that increased penalties and radically expanded which crimes made an immigrant eligible for deportation. And they made the changes retroactive. So do you think the 96 immigration law that President Bill Clinton signed plays a role here in what's happening now?
You know, I'm sure it contributes to what's happening now. It really did lay that foundation.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about is there ever an expiration? I mean, I know that since 1998, looking at the numbers, mm-hmm. more than 16,000 Southeast Asian Americans have received orders of removal. Between 68 and 87% of those orders are based on old criminal records that happened mm-hmm. years earlier. Is there ever an expiration? I mean, or can something that happened 30 years ago always still have an impact?
Yeah, I don't think that there is an expiration. We've seen folks, again, like I said, folks who've served their time over 20 years ago and still have final removal orders.
So these are, some of these are decades old.
Mm-hmm.
Chai, you've pushed for Hmong history to be taught in schools. This is something that you've mm-hmm. been very passionate about. Why do you think this is so important?
You know, I think this is important because everybody deserves to see a reflection of themselves taught in the schools that they go to. I also believe that this is one step in making sure that many ethnic minorities who live in Wisconsin, their history is also taught in our schools. Our kids feel like they belong when they see themselves in the curriculums they're taught. And I say that yesterday, my daughter came home, my 7-year-old daughter came home all excited about being able to learn about Hmong and Laos in school, being able to share that her dad was born in a refugee camp and her grandpa was part of the Vietnam War because he was a soldier.
So that made her feel proud, that just having that, being able to share that?
That although she speaks no Hmong at all,
okay,
it made her feel proud for once that I saw to be actually be Hmong.
What do you think about the education element? How do you think that's critical to this entire issue?
Sure. So I think it's crucial, not just for the deportation or situation here as well, but it's also, you know, as our community are striving to try and rid this world of discrimination and racism, you know, the only way we can truly get rid of this is by through education. You know, I think a lot of the individuals, especially who are non-Hmong individuals, are, just humankind in general, we're afraid of the unknown. And by having education bills, such as the bill that's being proposed by Representative Shanklin and other representatives in the state legislature, this allows allows individuals who doesn't know what the Hmong community is be aware of the sacrifices or be aware of why the Hmong community or the Southeast Asian community is here. And this is the only way we can do it, in my personal opinion. And that's the only way we can do to rid this world of racism and discrimination.
We talked a little bit earlier about the program in Cambodia that helps Cambodian deportees from the U.S. adapt to life there. This reintegration program that they've got, it's yielded more of a willingness from foreign governments to accept those removals. In an NBC interview, the director of national policy at the civil rights nonprofit Southeast Asia Resource Action Center said her worry is that creating a similar infrastructure for reintegration in Laos would make refugees who have not lived in Laos for a long time susceptible to targeting. What do you think she meant by that?
You know, I don't know what she meant by that, but I would just want to bring it back to how reintegration programs are looking like, right? We do see that folks, even with the program in Cambodia, the deportees who are going back to Cambodia still have a hard time there. They still struggle to survive and to live there, and so we already know that these programs aren't successful. We already know that these countries, when refugees are deported back, that they're gonna face some sort of hardship. We've seen that with Cambodia, and we shouldn't repeat that mistake with Laos.
Have you spoken with anyone who has been deported as to, you know, what their life is like after they've gone, after they've been returned back to a country that they don't know?
I haven't personally spoken to folks, but I do know people who have spoken to those who have been deported back to Cambodia. They are saying it's hard to get a job. It's hard to live in a country that you know nothing about. It's hard to integrate into the communities there. And a lot of them go back and actually suffer a lot of health complications.
Really?
It's very different. Mm-hmm. And so I'm expecting that it's going to be the same in Laos.
We talked about the proposal by the Democrat from Minnesota, an effort to kind of put a hold on this. Are there any other proposals floating around that might help this cause? And, you know, with respect to this issue, mm-hmm. are you hearing any other proposals that are being floated or discussed?
Not at the moment. We are following the lead of CREC, the Southeast Asian Action Resource Center, is in D.C., and they're actually following some of the proposals and seeing, you know, what other proposals might actually help in this case. I do know that there is, like, another similar bill to Representative McCollum's bill, but for Vietnamese deportees.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Earlier in the program, Chai, something that you said really continues to stick with me. You talked about your own family, people with final orders, and you said that they are saying their goodbyes, that they are they're preparing for the worst. Yi, have you spoken with families who are in similar situations?
I've spoken to individuals that know other, and that knows other individuals. But what we're starting to see now is that these individuals are afraid to come out and actually look for help now as well. They're just afraid of coming out and asking for help, and that's what we're seeing now. I don't know if Chai's seeing the same thing as well, but it's very difficult to get these individuals to come out and talk. And they're talking indirectly through other people.
Mm-hmm. Are they worried that if they talk to you, that then they'll be identified as somebody who is targeted for this removal?
That, but also, like, they also, it's bringing forward that they have criminal convictions. And the way that they'll be perceived in our communities. And I just want to say to everyone, if you have final deportation orders, you are at risk. Don't be ashamed. This is not about deportation of criminals. The deportation of refugees is actually, again, a violation of human rights. So if anyone who would like to reach our organization, please call us. Everything is kept confidential. We will safety plan with you. We will help you figure resources your way. Call us, Freedom Inc., at 608-630-8901. We will also be having a family support immigration clinic on March 28th in Madison. So I really encourage any family members who are impacted or who are worried to connect with us.
And is that just for Portage County residents, or is that for everybody?
That's everybody in the state.
Okay. Are there additional efforts underway to help reach out, perhaps in Marathon County as well?
Yeah, there are. We at the Hmong American Center has been doing is reaching out to the local clans and letting them know of the resources available. The Hmong American Center itself is not equipped with the experience to be dealing with deportation issues, but we've been working pretty well with Freedom Inc. and been referring people to that organization there, especially when they have any questions regarding deportation.
Okay. Is the funding of a reintegration program absolute confirmation that an increase in deportations will happen? Is this a for sure thing?
Well, we do know that if programs are being developed to help folks integrate, there probably are plans to increase deportation.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not absolute, but you feel like this is a thing that is a very real risk?
Yeah, it is a thing with very real risk. And it's already been confirmed that funding from the USAID office is going to be funding a reintegration program.
Yes.
I have read reports in other news media, the New York Times, the Washington Post, for example, that have told personal stories of people who are immigrants facing deportation, some of whom said that they are terrified of being deported. Some even say they are at risk of death. Is that an overstatement?
No, I don't think it's an overstatement at all. We have to remember that after the conclusion of the secret war in Laos, there was re-education camps as well that were developed. That the purpose there was to re-educate members of the Hmong community and Southeast Asian community so that they would be able to fit into the new communist regime. We have to recall that that's not that long ago. And I also have to remind people and the community that time and time again, communist regime has not been very tolerant of opposition from the community, from individuals. And if an individual who has experienced democracy or freedom of to vote or the freedom to voice or every benefit that they've received in the United States already, what makes you think that if they were to go into a communist regime, they would be able to be in a sense here, have their reign to be able to do whatever they want there.
But let's also talk about, I just want to put one more point out. Let's just also talk about, like, we can't talk about human rights in Laos without talking about the violation of human rights right here in the United States and what is actually this root cause of these folks getting deported, right? Like, I think it's easy for us to talk about what will happen if they go back. Let's talk about what has happened to them here in the United States that has resulted in these deportations. What's happening here in the United States, and how are we treating refugees from countries where we had no business being in, where we were the cause of these folks, such as Cambodia and Laos. And let's talk, like let's look at that. And so it's hard for me to talk about what happens in Laos when they go back without talking about what's happening here.
Yes, let's mm-hmm. talk about that. I mean, what is happening here? What do you see that you'd like to see different?
Yeah, well, again, talking about our refugee resettlement programs. A lot of these folks who have final deportation orders actually did not have fair due process. Our families do not understand the legal system. Our families cannot afford attorneys to fairly and well represent these folks in the early 2000s and the late 1990s. So we're talking about what other countries can do to our folks when they're returning, but I don't think we've ever talked about what has this country done for us and what are the reasons that we're here. Don't get me wrong, I'm proud to be American. I'm proud to live in this country and to be a citizen. But also part of that being proud is that knowing that I want to contribute to the change in this country and the way that we treat refugees, regardless if they're Hmong refugees, Cambodian refugees, or the refugees at the border.
What about you? What would you like to see happen?
Well, Chai hit most of the things that I think as well. When we brought refugees over, my experience obviously is with the Southeast Asian community. We set them up for failure by putting them into areas where it's it's very high poverty. It's very low income. These individuals had to, in a sense, rebuild their life from. And eventually, organizations like the Hmong American Centers and also other Hmong MMAs or mutual assistance associations had to be developed to help assimilate, help these community thrive. But once these communities starts to be able to walk, funding for organizations like these start to disappear because they feel that these individuals are no longer, they no longer need this service. But as a matter of fact, right now there's an article that came out that said the Southeast Asians are the largest group of refugees in the country here are Southeast Asians, but they are the one who has the highest poverty rate mm-hmm. in the entire country here. So if you think about that, there needs to be more that needs to be done that would be able to help these individuals become successful. And when they become successful, they become contributing members to this community by paying their taxes, by employing people. And we need to look at the positive outcomes or the positive or the benefits of having these individuals.
So, and you say more needs to be done. So specifically, what do you think needs to happen? I mean, what would you like mm-hmm. to see?
Yeah, well, ultimately the end of deportation of refugees.
Sure.
ultimately that, but really there's a couple things that we're pushing for. Things such desegregated data so we can have better data, so we can have better research on how do we support Southeast Asian communities. Yes. Better research and what are the root causes of poverty and why, what's different from a refugee and an immigrant.
One thing Chai mentioned that's very important there is that right now a lot of these Southeast Asians are categorized with Asians in general here. So because of this, we're categorized with the Koreans, the Chinese, the Japanese, who are all very successful. And because of this, I don't want to say the data is incorrect, but in a sense, it becomes incorrect as well. Mm-hmm. So now, because of this happening, the members of the Southeast Asian community are not getting the resources that they need, whether that's assistance with a obviously help with additional funding for organizations or additional funding to develop programs that would be able to help these individuals become sustainable.
Okay. Before we wrap up, I wanted to give you another opportunity to share with listeners those resources that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. You said that there's a phone number people can call. There's something coming up if you want to let us know again what that is.
Yes. Yeah, so if anyone who is impacted, please reach out to us, Freedom Inc. at 608-630-8901. Or we will also be having an immigration family support clinic happening at the in Madison at Freedom Inc. on March 28th. So follow us on Facebook for more information on that event.
Okay. And is there anything for people at your organization that you'd like to share? Where can people get more information?
If anybody has any questions or concerns and they're not able to, and they need any help, I strongly recommend them to contact Freedom Inc., which was mentioned before. They're equipped with the necessary resources to be able to help members of the community here. If they, obviously, if they have any questions, they could contact us. But I would recommend them strongly to contact Freedom Inc.
All right, very good. That is all we have time for today on Route 51. I'm Shereen Siewert. I'd like to thank our guests today, Yi Lang Zhang and Chai Mua. Our executive producer is Rick Ryer. Our on-air producer today is Joy Ratch Kramer. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program at WPR.org/Route 51. Please note that Route 51 will move from Thursday mornings to Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network on March 20th, when we host a mayoral debate between Wausau Mayor Robert Milkey and his challenger, Katie Rosenberg. Next week, Wisconsin Public Radio reporter Rob Menser will step in as guest host for a discussion on Wisconsin's presidential primary and an analysis on the 7th Congressional District special election. Until then, we're heading out of town.